when I go out and look at cheaper bags. And I sometimes ask the shopkeep, is this real leather? And he's like, at this price, you'll never get real leather.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm in my head, I'm like doing fist bumps, and I'm like, yes, you know?
Yes.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the new episode of The Two Vegans. Thank you for listening to our episodes. And if you haven't heard our previous episode, we have spoken about some vegan mythbusters. Today is a different episode and we have a special guest on our show, Victoria Parker, a design consultant who specializes in eco-fashion and is also an active vegan based in Dubai. Hi Victoria, how are you?
Hi there, I'm good, thank you.
All well. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm quite excited about this particular topic. We are going to focus on vegan fashion today. So, Victoria, as a vegan, are there any things that you do differently than any other design consultant out there who's not quite focused in eco-fashion?
To be honest, most of the difference is to do with the fabrics that are used. So, obviously, there's a big trend for things like fur. It seems to be a big issue at the moment. It's using things like fur, skins, leather, suede, silk, and also wool as well. So, basically, somebody who's a vegan or eco-friendly or environmentally aware would choose not to use these kind of fabrics in their collections or in their designs in any way, whether it be interior design, fashion design or anything, because these obviously come from animals and there's a level of cruelty involved. So it's just a case of avoiding these types of fabrics, really. So when I have clients that I work with, I try to offer alternatives to these types of fabric.
Right. So all these fabrics that you currently mentioned, I'm quite aware of them as well. And I think there's this big trend coming up in the market about compassion and fashion. It's relatively easier for people who are transitioning to being a vegan to change their closet before they can change their diet.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's just sort of being aware of when you are shopping. I think it's in some ways it is similar to when you're eating. So when you're eating, it's, you know, being aware of how something got to be on your plate. There is a lot of disconnect between what's on our plate and where we buy it in the supermarket or the restaurant. And I think in a lot of ways it's similar with any product, and that's including fashion. So, you know, picking up, a lot of people think, you know, a silk shirt is really, really beautiful. But then it's just being aware of, you know, where did that silk come from? What's the process? Many people are aware, not everybody, but many people are aware, the actual silkworm is boiled alive, and that's how they take the threads out of the silkworm. So a lot of people would be like, well, you know, it's just a silkworm. But if you are a vegan and or you are ethical, environmentally friendly, this kind of thing, that's something that you're not going to be okay with, that something has suffered in order for you to have this product. Fashion is very important because people kind of reflect their personality and their personal style and their character through fashion. And I think for me, the way that I work, that's kind of how I feel, that definitely nothing should suffer just so that you can look good, especially when we have so many alternatives. When we were back in the day, we were all living in caves. Maybe we needed fur as a way to keep warm and, you know, to protect from the elements. But these days, it's just not necessary. There's too many alternatives out there that we can use. We really don't need animals to be dying and slaughtered just so that we can look good.
Absolutely. And I think today, where there's fast fashion, where literally people are buying and chucking and buying and chucking things on a regular basis, people have kind of disconnected from where this is actually coming from. Most of our fabrics and most of our clothes these days are made in poorer countries, if I can say. For them to be able to cater to such demand, they don't quite care about sourcing the product ethically or manufacturing the product ethically. And that's where people need to stop and take a look as to where this is coming from. So you mentioned that silkworms are actually boiled alive. On what scale do you think that is being done around the world?
Demand is huge. Silk is seen as a very, very luxury item. And I'd say for a lot of the clients that I work with personally, silk is something that very often comes up in the course of conversation. I do a lot with intimates like lingerie and nightwear. And in the nightwear sector, silk is huge. Also, it's seen as a natural fabric. And there's such different areas, you know, you've got natural fabrics, you've got environmentally friendly fabrics, you've got cruelty-free fabrics. But just because something is natural doesn't necessarily mean that it's environmentally friendly or cruelty-free. Silk is a perfect example of that. It's a very natural fabric, but very cruel in terms of how it's produced. Cotton is a natural fabric, but it's not necessarily very environmentally friendly. There's a high level of pesticides that's needed to be able to keep production of cotton on a huge scale. So they're not all automatically, you know, completely linked. Like I say, it's seen as a luxury fabric, a luxury natural fabric, and a lot of people do like natural fabrics. So I think that's why there is there's such a huge demand globally for it. I think the biggest production is probably in China and India. I think these are the two main countries that produce silk on such a high level. There is also actually one of the silks available is called a Himsa silk, which is also known as peace silk, as in peace and love. A lot of people see it as the perfect alternative because the silkworms are actually allowed to live their natural life. But there is a bit of an issue with that in that there is such an overproduction of repopulation of these silkworms in order to get like the huge quantities that a lot of the silkworms actually die quite early. They can't actually sustain the huge amount of silkworms. So it's not actually as cruelty-free as a lot of people imagine it is. To be honest, Himsa silk or standard silk, I think it's, if you're truly a vegan and you really are concerned about the cruelty aspect, it's not something that's really worth considering, which is a shame because silk is a beautiful fabric, but principles.
Of course, absolutely. And I think the fact that animals are not placed on this earth to service you is something that vegans believe in. And a lot of people do come to me and tell me that, oh, but this animal was killed humanely, which is a complete oxymoron. I mean, you can't you can't kill somebody humanely who doesn't want to die. Today, I'm sure there are a lot of other alternatives that feel like silk. Would you probably give us an idea on what are the alternatives that we're looking at?
Yeah, obviously most synthetics are cruelty-free in terms of the fact that there's no animal that's actually suffered during the manufacturing process. The only downside of synthetics, and actually a lot of fabrics that we talk about, there's the environmental damage, which could just have a knock-on effect on the animals that live in the environment. So for example, the dyeing processes of a lot of fabrics, and just something like a denim, for example, which is a cotton. The downside is that during that dyeing processing and then the finishing processing that they do, there's a lot of chemicals involved in the textile industry that when they get flushed out of the factories and into the rivers, it kills the fish potentially, goes into those rivers, obviously go into the sea, and then there's other marine life that then gets affected by it. And as we now know, you know, there's many fish in the sea that do have high levels of mercury, plastics, all of the kind of problems with their health because of the amount of chemicals that we dump into the sea, and the textile industry is a big part of that. I think natural dyes, there are a lot of companies that deal with natural dyes, and I think that's something to look into. But if you're looking for something, an actual silk alternative, there's things like bamboo silk. Bamboo is fantastic. You can get bamboo jersey, bamboo cotton, bamboo silk, and bamboo is great because, as many people know, it grows like crazy. Don't need any kind of pesticides, don't have the problem with the bugs, so it's very eco-friendly. But also it can be made into a lot of different fabrics like the silk and the cotton. It's naturally antibacterial. It's very, very good for products that are close to the skin, for example underwear, nightwear, that kind of thing. Another one is soy silk, which comes from the remnants from the soya bean processing, so for example tofu. The remnants that come from that production will be sold to a factory that's making soy silk. And what they will do is they will turn those remnants into a kind of a thread that will be then be either woven, knitted, whatever, and you can create soy silk, soy cotton, very eco-friendly and vegan alternative, cruelty-free alternative to a lot of the fabrics that we have.
Okay, so speaking about fabrics that are high in demand around the world, I think, or maybe even more than silk, is leather. Your bags, your shoes, your accessories, your belts, and there's so much leather. Everything has pretty much
sofas, car interiors.
So, and it's the same case with dairy. And I think when there's so much of it around you, you stop realizing that this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's the case with leather as well. So, what are your thoughts on leather?
Obviously, it's horrific. Yes, it's very sad that we are using so much leather. And I think sadly, a lot of people see leather as it's a byproduct of the meat industry. I think when you actually know there are cows that are killed just for the leather. It's really sad, and it is a very, very highly in demand fabric. There are sort of like PVC or what they call pleather alternatives, which is like a synthetic leather. There's a lot of that around. I've got a leather jacket myself that's like a pleather. But something that I find really interesting is there's two innovations that are out at the moment, and one of them I'm probably looking to work with very soon. It's a fabric called, the first one is a fabric called Pinyatex, and basically it's a leather that's made from pineapple leaves. It looks really fascinating. It was a lady who, I think she was based in Portugal, and she's created this because she was sourcing leather from, I think it could have been the Philippines or somewhere in the Far East, and she saw that absolute destruction the leather industry was having on the, obviously for the animals, but also the environment. But the same as the meat industry, the environmental damage, never mind the cruelty, it's the environmental damage as well, because of the, you know, the huge amount of water that's used to during the processing and the tanning and everything, chemicals as well to take the raw hides into a leather. So as she was investigating all of this, I think she was pretty horrified by it. And that's when she started seeing that the local people were using the sort of like the threads from the pineapple leaves, and that they were actually able to make this into like a textile. So during the course of the investigation and the development, this is the fabric that they've come up with, which is called Pinatex. And it looks incredibly like leather, and it's really, really beautiful. And so this is something I'm investigating at the moment for two of my clients. And I'm going to receive, I think next week I should receive the samples. And I am so excited to receive them because it looks like beautiful fabric. And if I can, you know, show this to my clients and say, well, look, you were thinking to use leather, but this is an eco-friendly environment. You know, alternative, it's cruelty-free, it's eco-friendly, it ticks all the boxes, it's a natural fabric as well. Why don't we use this? And I think that people will start jumping on alternatives like this and realizing how important it is to switch to alternatives like this. And if something like this can really grow and gather momentum, I think it will really pave the way for a lot more innovation. Another innovation that is not, I don't think it's quite as far developed as the Pinatex, but it's called a muskin, and it's leather made from mushrooms. They're more sort of, they're not quite as far developed yet, but I think they're developing it and they're getting there. But I think it's really exciting that we're able to use plants and vegetables and fruit and try to make really, really nice fabrics so that we don't need to have such a bad impact on the environment, and it's cruelty-free as well. So these are two that I'm really, really excited to work with at the moment.
No, that's amazing. I think once you have the pineapple leather over here, I'd really love to check it out. I never thought that I'd get to see that in Dubai anytime soon. Yeah. I thought it was going to travel all around the world and then come to this country. Let me know when you have it. In fact, do you have an Instagram page?
I do, yes.
So for our listeners, maybe you can put up a picture.
Yes.
Do you want to give them your handle?
Yes, sure. It's lady_VLP.
So please check lady_VLP on Instagram. We're hoping to see the pictures of all kinds of cool fabrics that you have. Another question that I had on leather particularly is, besides being a fashion statement for centuries now, people also use leather to keep themselves warm. These alternatives that you speak about, do you think they do the same job, or is that something that they would struggle in?
That is something I would need to investigate myself. From what I understand, it has the same properties or better product properties that as leather. So it's more breathable than leather is. I imagine it's got the same properties as leather for the warmth. But I still think that there's always sort of like a lining that you can use in if you are going to have like, say, leather jacket, for example. You know, if you've got a good lining, a lot of the time it's a good lining that's going to give the garment an insulation. So it's something to investigate, but I think there's ways around it. In this day and age, we've got so much knowledge of fabrics and so much innovation. There's ways to make sure that it would work.
Right. While we're talking about keeping ourselves warm using some fabrics, I think the three big culprits there are fur, wool, and feathers, down feathers, if I may call that. A lot of people do not recognize the kind of cruelty that is involved, because most people believe that fur, wool, and feather comes from standard shearing of an animal, and it does not involve cruelty as such. It may probably involve a certain amount of distress to the animal, but not hardcore cruelty. There's a lot of cruelty involved, especially for fur, where animals are being skinned alive. I've seen videos from China. And
honestly, it's not even just China. It happens in, I think there's a massive fur farm. I think it's either Norway or Denmark, and they're one of the biggest producers of fur. Fur had a recent upsurge. It came back onto the catwalks. It was a few seasons ago, and it suddenly seemed like all the designers were doing something. I think it was autumn, winter. It was either last year or the year before, and all the big designers were using fur in their collections, and it was really disheartening. It was really upsetting, because it seemed like there'd been all these campaigns about, you know, trying to kill the fur industry, and then it suddenly seemed like it had gained like a popular kind of feel again. And there are people like J-Lo, Kardashians, Kanye West, all the standards. Who else? Rihanna's been seen wearing fur. It doesn't help when people like this are wearing fur, because they're glamorizing something. And the worst thing is that people like J-Lo and the Kardashians, they've been shown by PETA, they've been the people for the ethical treatment of animals, they've been shown videos of the fur industry. They know what happens, they know what goes on, they know how they get the fur, and they still wear it. And that's really, really sad. That's really, really sad, because also they're giving the message that we don't care, we're still going to wear fur because our image is more important to us. So it did seem like there was going to be an increase in the fur, and I think there is a little bit out there, but this year there's been a lot of campaigning anti-fur, and it's actually been a really good year because 2017 Gucci, BCBG, Max Mara, Michael Kors and Jimmy Choo, even just last week or something, they've actually all banned fur from their collections. So starting from next year, so I think that would be their spring summer 2018 collections, all fur has been banned. And I think that's really key, because I think if big brands like Gucci and Michael Kors stop doing that, I think, fingers crossed, hopefully it will have a big trickle down effect. And it means that, you know, then, because I think they're going to be, especially somebody like Gucci, who's a huge brand, and I think a lot of people follow them to see what they're doing, and they take on a lot of what Gucci are doing, and then they do it themselves. So if Gucci then start to do this, and there's no major impact in their sales, so many of the brands are going to do the same, because they're going to see that it's not really impacting their sales, which unfortunately money talks, and that's the most important thing for a lot of brands. Fur has already been banned. I know it's banned in the UK. I think it's banned in a lot of countries already. A really sad thing is there was a recent story about, I think I'd mentioned it to you last week, or about it's banned in the UK, but due to the mass breeding of animals in China, and they do not even just foxes, they do like even cats and dogs, and even cat and dog fur has been made, you know, into like gloves, hats, whatever. They, because of the mass farming of these animals for the fur, they've driven down the fur price so low, it's actually cheaper than fake fur. So in the UK, there was an incident, actually had an item, I think it was a pair of gloves, fur trimmed gloves or a hat, and somebody bought this pair of gloves and suspected, even though it said fake fur on the label, it was actually turned out to be real fur. They had it analysed in a laboratory, and it turned out it was probably cat hair. So it's actually banned in the UK, but because of the low, low price of real fur versus fake fur, it was actually cheaper for that Chinese manufacturer to put in real fur than to put in fake fur. That meant that they're margin themselves was actually lower. It's good that it was highlighted, because I think it's something that a lot of buyers and retailers need to be aware of, that, you know, if real fur is so much cheaper than fake fur, they need to have something in place to ensure, like some kind of testing or some kind of punishment to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen.
No, I remember you mentioning this a couple of weeks ago. When these countries are importing that fur, there should be some kind of tests that are run, especially when you have a law in place that mentions that actual fur is not allowed in this country. So I'm quite amazed. Was this like a one-off case where they missed it? But for the layman, we obviously live in a very, very warm country. And I've always lived in warm countries, but you definitely are from the UK and you do experience cold weathers. When I'm going out shopping, how do I actually differentiate between, is there any way that I can personally on my end differentiate between actual fur and fake fur?
There is a way, I think, with fake fur. Very often the actual hair itself of the fur is much more blunt cut at the end, whereas real fur will always be tapered towards the end naturally. And I think also if you part the fur and you look at the skin in which it's embedded, on a fake fur you can kind of tell that it's more sort of glued into place, whereas on a real fur you'll see the fur actually, the hair will actually be coming out of the skin as it would naturally. If in doubt, don't buy it. That's what I would say.
And do we have alternatives to fur besides fake fur?
Not really. It would be really nice if there was some kind of humane way to get fur and the animal stays alive, but then it would be similar to the wool industry, where in theory it's meant to be humane the way they, you know, they shear the sheep, but we all know that in real life a happy shorn sheep is not necessarily the reality, that there's a lot of abuse in the wool industry. And in terms of alternatives at the moment, it's just synthetics that's available. I mean, the synthetics are good. I think there has been questions raised about the environmental impact of fake fur, because synthetics are not always really the best in terms of the environment. It depends how far you want to take it. You know, are you cruelty-free? Are you also environmentally aware? But if you really want a fur and you don't want the cruelty aspect, I'd say the fake fur is the way to go. If you're also environmental, maybe just avoid it altogether and go for something else.
Besides fur as well, the people who are aware of the cruelty behind fur, try and usually switch to wool or down jackets. If I'm not very well versed about this, why would you say that there is cruelty involved in shearing a sheep or shearing a bird for that matter?
Same as with factory farming of meat, to be honest, or any dairy. I think when there's mass farming for mass consumption of a product, the key driver is money. And in order to keep the money coming in and to serve the masses, it's just going to be speeding through as many. It's like a production line, basically. You've got to speed through as many products as you can, which is fine if it's a car or it's a packet of biscuits or, you know, a chair or something. But when it's a sentient being, to run that through like a production line is a very, very different scenario. So the problem with the mass manufacture of wool or down feathers for like a duvet or a pillow or something like that is that in these industries, they've got to speed through as many animals as they possibly can in order to get the highest amount of whatever it is that they need, be it wool or be it feathers. In order to try and speed through those animals, take sheep for example, when they're shearing, there's not necessarily the correct level of care that's taken. So people think of a happy little sheep that's being sheared like a puppy in a parlor, right? They just think it's going to be beautifully taken hours over. It's nothing like that. It's it's practically having its skin ripped off in order to get that wool. And I watched a video about pregnant ewes that were just a few days away from giving birth, being tossed around like rag dolls while having their wool shorn off them, and then thrown out into a field or something. So, and the same with the feathers. The level of care that's taken when they're pretty much plucking these feathers out of this poor bird, and the level of abuse that happens is just because they're not taking any care, because they can't afford to, because of the time, it's speeding through it. So that's where the problem lies, really. Again, avoiding it is better.
What are the cool innovations there are in the market currently? I mean, we obviously spoke about the pineapple leather, and we spoke a bit on soy silk. Besides this, are there any other alternatives out there in the market that are picking up or have the potential to pick up in the near future?
Because a lot of vegans are very sort of eco-friendly and environmentally aware, there's a lot of recycled fabrics that are going on at the moment and are really picking up a lot of popularity. There's designers such as Stella McCartney, Adidas, H&M, they're all using recycled fabric. There's a number of manufacturers actually around the world. What they do is they take the plastics. So there's one company that actually specializes in taking plastics from the ocean, and as we know, there's a huge problem of plastics making its way into the rivers and into the oceans, which affects the marine life. Huge amount of plastic that's ingested into the fish, which then, if you are a fish eater, then you're ingesting all that plastic. So and it kills a lot of birds and marine life just through the sheer amount of plastics that they're ingesting. So what this company does is they're taking a lot of the plastic that specifically they try to take from the sea. They melt it down and they make sort of thin fibers or fine fibers, and then they reweave that or knit it into a fabric like a polyester or like a silk or lots of different fabrics actually. So the fabric is made from recycled plastic bottles basically. I'm working with a client at the moment, and we're using a fabric exactly like this. It's called Econil, and it comes from plastic bottles, and we're doing swimwear fabrics with it. I think these are the kind of areas where the innovation is needed, because it's hand in hand trying not to be cruel towards the animals and trying to save their environment. And this seems to be really picking up in popularity. So my favorite designer in the industry actually is Stella McCartney, because all of her products are vegan and cruelty free, and she's a pioneer in leading innovation in things like this. A lot of the companies she works with are vegan and cruelty free, and so the fabrics that she's using are also environmentally friendly. So she's probably a designer that I would really recommend and look towards, because she, her own ethics are that she's very environmentally friendly, cruelty free, and vegan. And that goes for her cosmetic, I think her perfumes and things like that as well.
Okay, I was actually going to ask you, is Stella McCartney vegan? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, right, we're recording an episode. Yeah, but I also wanted to add on this particular point is that Stella McCartney does very high-end fashion, and some people can and some people cannot afford it. Yeah. And I think, personally, I am not a big high-end fashion, even though I'd like to be, but my pocket doesn't allow me to be. But I also find that when I'm on the other end of the spectrum, which is street fashion or cheaper fashion, they are by default vegan. Most of it, not all of it, of course. When I go out and look at cheaper bags, and I sometimes ask the shopkeep, is this real leather? And he's like, at this price, you'll never never get real leather. Yeah. And, you know, I'm in my head, I'm like doing fist bumps and I'm like, yes,
yes.
You know? So I think just by default, a lot of cheaper fashion is vegan and not a lot of people know this. And it always helps to ask the shop attendants as to what fabric this is.
Definitely.
With clothes, you obviously have labels, but sometimes with bags and shoes, you don't.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool that this is something that I don't have to come out of my comfort zone, or it's not like I have to compromise on fashion at both end of the spectrum. That you are, if you are a high-end fashion shopper, if you're a street fashion shopper, there's ample opportunity to become a vegan and shop cruelty-free.
I think the only reason I mentioned Stella McCartney is because a lot of the street fashion brands, they take a lot of inspiration from the big brands. So it's always great when somebody like Stella McCartney or Gucci going for free, when they do something, quite often, because a lot of the people like H&M and Zara, they take a lot of inspiration from the big brands. So if they see that a big brand is going cruelty-free, like banning fur or whatever, and they see that they're doing very successfully with that, they'll follow suit, because they'll see that it's something that's really working. So that's why I'm really, really happy when the big brands do something really key like this, because then it just has a filter down effect throughout the rest of the industry.
I think taking on from the fact that you mentioned that Stella McCartney also does perfumes, and besides her, I think there are a lot of cosmetic brands these days, whether it be perfumes or lotions or hair products or anything like that, that are now opening up avenues for building cruelty-free products. They have realized that there is no need to test products on animals or have animal ingredients in it. So
I think it definitely seems to be the way forward. One of my personal favorite brands is Kat Von D. She's vegan. Her ethics are fantastic, and I think that shows throughout her whole brand. So she's somebody that you can 100% trust, because her own ethics are so strong, so you know that that would be carried on through. The company that run her brand is called a company called Kendo, and I think they also have Kat Von D, they have Fenty, which is Rihanna's beauty line, and Marc Jacobs. So all three of those, because Kendo as a company are cruelty-free and they don't test on animals or use animal products. So as a result, those three brands are all cruelty-free and vegan by default, which is fantastic. But I think there's some others as well. There's if you want to go cheaper, there's a brand in boots called Gosh Cosmetics from Copenhagen in Denmark. They're cruelty-free. There's a British brand called Barry M, which is super cheap, and they're also cruelty-free. I think there's a lot. There's a little bit of a grey area, is that there's a lot of brands that are cruelty-free, such as Urban Decay and Too Faced, a few others as well. But the problem is their parent company does test on animals. So it's a real grey area, because some people feel like they will still buy from them because that specific brand is cruelty-free. And they're trying to give a message that, you know, they're buying from a cruelty-free brand rather than someone like Estée Lauder, who does test on animals. But it's whether you feel that, you know, if you give your money to someone like Urban Decay, that's owned by, I think it's L'Oreal, you are indirectly giving your money towards L'Oreal. So it's where you sit on that. Personally, I wouldn't give my money to a brand that's owned by Estée Lauder or L'Oreal, because indirectly I'm giving my money. But some people don't feel that strongly about it. So that's a little bit of a grey area. And then the other thing is, do they sell in China? Any company that sells in China, beauty or household, whatever, they're always going to be tested on animals, because that's China's law. So if it's sold in China, big no-no automatically.
Yeah, I think this is a very hot topic for debate amongst vegans themselves. I personally am totally against companies that do test on animals or use animal ingredients. But when there are companies like, for example, L'Oreal claims that they do not test on animals unless they're selling in China, like you mentioned. Or for that matter, even The Body Shop, which was actually a trendsetter of non-animal testing, fair trade. And I jumped on that opportunity and I was like, there is a brand that has come out here, is pretty much selling the same stuff. Why shouldn't I pick it up? And I have it in my convenience. And Body Shop was everywhere at some stage. You know? But then after some time, they were bought by a big company, I think, by L'Oreal.
They've now been sold to another company and they've regained their cruelty-free status. I think it was this year or last year, I can't remember when they were bought, but they've actually been sold by L'Oreal now. But for a long time, true vegans and animal lovers would not touch Body Shop, simply because even though the Body Shop itself kept their cruelty-free principle and they wouldn't test on animals, the sheer fact that they're owned by L'Oreal, who do test on animals, just meant that for a lot of people, it didn't matter if a body shop is cruelty-free because their parent company is not cruelty-free. So, you know, what's the point in buying from body shop?
It's interesting you say that, because I was going to say that I never stopped buying body shop then. The company itself believed and had certain principles. And my message to L'Oreal would have been that I'm going to continue supporting a brand that you hold that is vegan. Because at the end of the day, everything is run by demand. L'Oreal needs to see that there's more demand for body shop as compared to their other brands which test on animals. I think there is no such place where you could actually draw the line, because in that case I shouldn't be buying soy milk from a supermarket that sells dairy, or go to a restaurant that serves non-vegetarian food. But the second I find that there's a restaurant that has had a vegan option available, I consider that as a victory.
Because you're showing the demand for that product, yeah.
If I don't do that, if I don't show the demand, there is no way that particular brand is going to consider shifting. Yeah. So I'm on the other end of this debate, and I know it's a very controversial thing that I'm saying on my podcast right now.
It's a very grey area, very grey area.
Well, this is just my personal opinion, and I believe that it's very difficult to draw a line. It's very difficult to, and I've always maintained this from the start of my vegan activism, that there's no such thing as 100% vegan, or there's no such thing as a one size fits all. Everybody's doing whatever they can, and if me buying cruelty free products, despite them having a parent company that does test on animals, I would rather do that and show them that there is a demand for this, so you guys need to stop doing that.
I'm looking
forward to all the slack that I'm going to receive after this.
I think everyone has their own way of sending their message, don't they?
That's great. I think we're reaching the end of the podcast. I just wanted to ask if you have any tip for our listeners in terms of buying something, and how can they reduce their impact on buying cruelty-filled products or non-vegan products or even environmentally unfriendly products?
I guess aside from what we've discussed in terms of the actual fabrics itself, I think another big area is probably packaging. I think the less packaging we have, the better. Or if we insist on having packaging, then some kind of eco-friendly packaging. There's a lot of plastic. Plastic is a huge problem, huge problem. So I think if there's any way that, you know, we can buy products with less plastic, that's already a step in the right direction. You know, where possible, in a lot of countries they've actually introduced with the plastic bags, you have to pay extra for it, and apparently it has really reduced the amount of people who are taking plastic bags now, which is great. So it's really reduced a lot of the plastic in that area. Look for innovation, look for something that is recycled. There's so much information online these days, there's so much information on Instagram. Look for designers who are doing ethical products, who are doing vegan brands, who are, you know, using these fabrics that have innovations. And if we support the alternatives, like the leather that's made from the pineapple, and like the soy silk, if we support these and try to make them more mainstream, hopefully we'll see, you know, real silk. I mean, it will be a challenge, you know, for silk and leather. These are seen as really key fabrics, luxury fabrics. Maybe same as what's happening with the dairy industry, where the sales are starting to go down, and the meat industry as well, where the sales are starting to go down. Maybe we can actually do the same with the leather industry and the silk industry and the fur industry.
And I think it's quite important to support your local vendors.
Definitely.
The
small brands.
The small brands, the individual brands, because, well, one, they're more flexible to the demands that you may have, and two, that they do not have the means to enter into any kind of factory farming or supporting cruelty and getting tests done and things like that. And I think it's very, very important that we lend that kind of support to these people, so that tomorrow, they are basically the future brands of the world. And I think another thing that people can do is, on the point that you mentioned about recycling, I also think reusing is something very important in fashion, which a lot of people are not doing. I try and make an effort to buy used or pre-loved items, because when I go out, one, it's really, really pocket friendly and it's really cheap, and people sell some really good stuff out there. So, you know, consider going to your nearest flea markets and see that. You'll be amazed by the amount of stuff that people are selling at such throwaway prices. I've got some really, really cool buys from flea markets here in Dubai. So yeah, that's our vegan tip for the day. And thank you so much for joining us, Victoria. You've given us a lot of good information. Most of it was new for me as well. Right, so I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. And please follow us on Facebook. We also have an Instagram handle called The 2.Vegans. And please also follow Victoria's Instagram handle, which is lady_VLP. And Victoria, we're going to wait for the pictures of the pineapple at least.
Yep, I will post today or tomorrow.
Excellent. So thank you so much for listening, and you guys have a good day. Bye-bye.